Begin Podfix Network transmission in 3, 2, 1.
Suffers in the back seat. Mama's home hungry.
Mark my words. Michael Knight will die.
I am the voice of Knight Industry 2000's microprocessor.
You wish to eat. You wish to drink. You wish to reproduce.
Yeah.
Which one first?
Excuse me. I was if I could get a Hill student loan.
Hey guys, Greg's never gonna forgive me for this one. I'm not talking to you anymore. Greg, we had to do it for the listeners. There's no way around it. It has to happen.
But did we? Did we, though? Didn't everybody tell us not to do, or, like, to just avoid it? Doesn't it, it's like, you, bad taste in the mouth and all that?
Most of our listeners, yeah, they were all like, well, good luck with that. That's going to be really fun. Have fun talking about that.
Do you think that entertaining the idea that we'd even do this, we lost our last listener again?
Probably.
Someone who's like, all right, I'll give them one more chance, came back after a couple of months, heard this, and were like, ah, screw you guys.
I'm getting out of here. I'm leaving. I can't do this anymore. I think our listeners really want us to suffer, Greg, because I didn't know how to attack this episode given how we thought about it, although I was a lot lighter on this episode than you were. But the poll results showed by a narrow margin that they wanted us to go through the entire episode and not just have a general discussion. So that's where
we
have
to. I think that the general discussion will come out of the point by points. Like I'll probably go on tangents and theorize and, you know, and guess stuff. That's probably what's going to happen.
I think there's only so much rage that I can get through text, and I've just been waiting and waiting and waiting because I watched this almost a week ago. I watched this on a Saturday night, and you watched it a couple days later, so this is the longest stretch that I've had between watching something and then recording my thoughts on it.
Well, you know, I got to say, thanks to you, buddy. You drove up and delivered said DVD to me on your own dime, because my box set of Knight Rider does not have
no.
it, which is interesting. And your menus are all different. The music's different and everything. So it's very interesting.
So I think the season one DVD that I have might have been like the first run edition of Knight Rider that was released. I don't remember what year it was, but I just find it odd that that is the only DVD you can find the movie on, because the ones I found on Amazon were like region 2 and 3. They didn't have the region 1 DVDs, and you couldn't even find the VHS tape. So like...
So do you think that you have the original Knight Rider TV show on vinyl?
I'm going to have to... Yes. I want it on Laserdisc too, Greg. That's all I want.
No, but like vinyl. Like, it's the TV show, but it's on vinyl.
So how would I watch it? Or would I have to, like, watch the episodes on mute and then play the vinyl in sync with the episode?
Oh, no. It would be a digital audio track, but an analog replay of it. So it would just be... It would just sound like noise.
Oh, okay.
But you'd watch it. You'd watch it through your mind's eye.
Oh, all right. I'm there with you. Absolutely. I like that. Hey, Greg.
Hey, Dave.
Welcome to the penultimate episode of Ciampa and Klein, The Knight Rider Years, a podcast by two friends who share a love of classic 80s television. I'm your host, Dave Ciampa.
I am your other host, Greg Klein.
So, guys, if you're new to the show, I said this the last couple of weeks, you picked an interesting episode to join us on. If you just wait two more weeks... So this episode and next week, we're going to be jumping into a brand new 80s television show. So you may have picked the right time to jump on with us. But the basic idea is that Greg and I, every iteration of the Ciampa and Klein brand, we choose a classic show from the 80s and we dissect it episode by episode. And we poke fun at these shows a lot. I would venture that this is more going to be rage than poking fun. But again, like I said a little bit earlier, I came out a little lighter on this than Greg did. I mean, Greg was just angry throughout this entire episode.
I've calmed down now, and now with some hindsight, I can kind of put things into their place. But I seriously, for real, almost stopped watching it.
I know. I got nervous. When you texted me about, there's a moment in the episode, in the movie that we'll get to. It's a little later in the movie. I knew that there was only about 25 minutes left, and I said to Greg, I said, you're so close. I know this was hard. But you have to get through it. You have to finish it for the person that this affects. You have to do this.
I did. I did.
You did.
Barely.
And you didn't feel much better about it. Greg, before we rage out, how you been?
I've been good.
Yeah?
Yeah. I really tired today.
Yeah, me too.
I don't know. Just, well, only having one day off, you know, this past weekend, it's kind of catching up to me, only having one single day out of six, you know. So it's catching up, and we had a fire alarm at work today, which is fun. Some sensor in the air duct was dusty, and the fire department showed up. So all that fun stuff.
Fantastic.
But good. Weather's been kind of warm, oddly.
Unseasonably so, for sure.
I'm waiting for the shit to hit the fan in February and actual winter to come back and be like, hey, guys, yeah, just late to the party.
Yeah.
But here's 6 feet of snow.
Good. Well, I mean, yeah, it has been unseasonably warm. We've had one pretty monster snowstorm that dropped like triple what the weathermen said that it was going to drop on us. But otherwise, yeah, it's been pretty decent up here. Hasn't been too bad. I am proud to say, or maybe other people might think differently, but I received my first dose of the COVID vaccine today, Greg, and I'm feeling pretty good about it.
So the first dose, from what I understand, is a gallon of fluid in one gigantic syringe, like a horse syringe or
it
something?
It is. It's like the comically large cartoon where the guy comes out from like he pulls it out of the Acme box, and it's just this giant syringe, and you look at it, and it's just this clear liquid. You have no idea what it is. And they shove it right into your forehead, which is even the weirdest. Yeah, it's just like right.
Yeah, oh, that explains it. That's why your head's filling up the entire camera here.
Yeah, can you see that?
I thought the perspective was weird, but no, it's just your COVID blister.
It's just where they injected the gallon of fluid into my system. No, it was very inoffensive. It's just, you know, it's a little done, one and done. You wait for 15 minutes and they send you on your way. My arm's a little sore, but as with any time I get a shot, my arm stays sore for a little while. So I get my second dose in 3 weeks. And then according to the data, after the second dose, I become greater than 90% immune to COVID-19.
Oh, that's great. So you can start having unprotected sex again?
That's exactly right. Yes, because I have to wear a mask on my dick, Greg.
Dick mask.
Mask. Yes, that's exactly what it is. But other than that, I mean, it's been a pretty low key week. Not much is going on. We're back into the swing of everything and feeling good. Everything's going really, really well over here, Greg.
Great. That's wonderful. That's
absolutely
wonderful, Dave.
Do we want to talk about a thing?
What is that thing, David?
The thing is the 1991 television movie Knight Rider 2000.
First, I got to open a beer.
All right. And listen, hey, I don't mean to put a pause on the recording for right now, but I just got hit with a DEFCON 1 situation in my stomach.
Oh, boy.
And I don't think I'm going to make it over the next 45 minutes. So should we put everybody on hold while I run upstairs to go to the bathroom?
Sure.
All right.
See how this beer does on my guts.
Get it, boy. I'm going to run upstairs and go to the bathroom. And boy, oh boy, guys, thanks for hanging tight. Greg, that was the fastest I think I've ever had to go to the bathroom.
That was shocking. That's not normal for you.
I'll tell you. Well, because I knew that I didn't want to make you wait too long. I ran up as fast as I could, told the girls I had to go to the bathroom, went to the bathroom and came back, and it was less than 5 minutes that you guys had to wait.
No one had to wait because they didn't have to wait. I had to wait.
I had to make you wait because you still don't want to talk about this episode, do you?
Let's get it done.
Okay. So I have to preface this. So David Hasselhoff, I think the best way to start this off is to say that in an interview with David Hasselhoff, I don't know when this was, that he goes on record as saying that Knight Rider 2000 missed the point of the original series and had taken the wrong direction. No shit.
Yes, 100%. 100%. And I don't know, I mean, if you read the script, if it looked right, but there's so many things in it that are just stupid.
Yes.
And now I'm frothing. I'm back there again.
I'm not even sure if I can willingly say that this is, because yes, there are references to the original series. Like the foundation is still there. You know, obviously Kit is there. Michael's there. Devin's there. They reference his retirement, but I still don't feel comfortable even saying that this is a direct follow-up to the episode, to the show. It's just the common thread is gone. Like the wonder and the charm, and while I was charmed by moments, the charm of the show is completely missing over this. And I think there's one key crucial thing that's missing from it that I thought it was okay, but it was like the key component that was missing from the entire movie. And I think you know what I'm talking about.
The fact that it was made in the first place?
That's exactly what it is.
The key component is the fact that it exists.
That's exactly what it was. Before I jump into the point by point, I have one more little bit that I thought was really interesting. It's another David Hasselhoff little bit. So when this released in 91, David Hasselhoff was already committed to Baywatch. I think they were going into their third season at this point. So he wasn't able to play Michael Knight full time. So what he suggested, Hasselhoff, was that maybe we make like 4 Knight Rider movies of the week to release at different points during the year, which I think would have been a cool idea.
Sure.
NBC basically told David Hasselhoff that they were going to do this. Like, yes, let's do this. This is great. But then they either doubled back or they didn't follow through with the plan because they only ended up ordering Universal to produce just one instead of the 4 movies, because Universal said they couldn't figure out how to make money unless they make at least 2 films and produce them back to back. And when NBC refused to order more than 1 movie, they basically just ended the idea of this 4 TV movie revival of Knight Rider over a couple of years.
But I guess judging from whatever was made,
yeah,
were the other ones supposed to tie into it, or all be standalone movies? Because where did it just doesn't make sense. Like, there's nowhere. I mean, I guess there's some place for it to go, but it's completely, this movie erased any existence of the way Knight Rider could have been, if that's what they released.
Yeah, and so I think my other biggest issue is that the script didn't feel like a Knight Rider anything at all. It felt like there was another script that they took and polished to include characters from Knight Rider. It felt like
they took a Quantum Leap script and turned it into Knight Rider and stretched it out for 90 minutes.
You know the story about Die Hard, the movies, right?
I don't know.
So the story goes is that there's 5 Die Hard movies. 4 of them, the first 4 movies, were based on other scripts that they just reworked to become Die Hard movies. The only movie that they ever made based on a Die Hard was Die Hard 5, which is obviously the worst of the 5. So it kind of feels like that they just took the characters from Knight Rider and then reworked some other script that wasn't working and just said, oh, well, let's put this in here and let's try to make it work.
Yeah. It definitely feels like it. Like, it feels like it was a TV movie, sure, definitely, about dirty cops and all that stuff, but they just, made it Knight Rider. It's just, and they plugged some stuff in. That's it.
There's another egregious offense that happens in the first 10 minutes of the movie.
I know that whole bathroom scene of Michael waking up and then spending the 10 minutes on the toilet slamming Pepto-Bismol and just destroying the toilet. That did not need to be in the movie.
And he's got cheese melted into his hair from the cheeseburgers.
Oh, I know. Oh, God. Just awful. Like, we get it. He fell apart a little bit. He's not who he used to be. But you don't have to rub it in our faces.
We understand that Michael is a little grizzled, but, like, we didn't need to see him taking a dump for 10 minutes. Of course, like, that's how we open the movie? Like, come on, man.
I don't know about you, but I honestly don't remember that scene.
I don't either.
In the movie.
I don't either. You know what I do remember? Cryogenic slumber, Greg.
Why? In the year 2000?
So we know that this movie takes place in the year 2000, so they actually do time it out. So Michael goes back to the Foundation at the end of season 4 in 1986. There's one reference that Michael retired in 1990, so it's been 10 years after he retired. So Michael stays with the Foundation for 4 years after the end of the show. Then he retires in 1990. So at some point, between 1990 and 2000, I think it's just this one city. They don't actually name the city, right?
Someplace in California. If they did mention it, I didn't catch it because it was only once. But from what I understand, this is like an experiment. It's the only city in the world or in the country that's doing this sort of stuff.
Yep.
So I don't. It was a fictitious city. It wasn't a real
place.
Okay.
So yeah, I guess the idea is that rather than arrest criminals and put them in prison, they're going to cryogenically freeze them, which kind of comes into play a little bit later because they talk about how it doesn't do anything. It's meaningless to these criminals who just sleep away their sentence, and then when they thaw them out after their parole, they come out of cryo sleep the same person they were than when they entered in, which is exactly what happens when the main antagonist, Thomas Watts, is thawed out when his parole is up.
I wish that Thomas Watts was played by Tom Waits.
That would probably just add a level of gravitas to this movie.
But as the character Renfield from Dracula.
I've never seen Dracula, Greg.
Okay, well, we can end this recording right now.
Are you talking about Bram Stoker's Dracula with Keanu?
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
No, I've never,
it's great.
Never seen it.
Gary Oldman?
I do know Gary Oldman, but obviously I know Gary Oldman, but it would have been better with anyone. Although I have to say, I like the actor who played Watts. He's a good actor.
He was good. I did like him. He was believable. He was a little one note. I mean, there wasn't any depth to him.
No.
He was a bit of a brick. Yeah. But he was satisfactory in portrayal of said gangster guy.
Right, because okay, so we see nothing after they unfreeze him. And then the next scene, he's breaking into this cocktail party with the mayor, and he breaks into the party, and he, in cold blood, he shoots the mayor and runs.
Yeah, he shoots a bunch of people, but it's at the top of, like, the Space Needle. I don't know if it's in Seattle. I don't remember. Yeah. This, and it's like, right off the bat, I'm watching this scene. I'm like, this is so slow. What is going on here?
Yeah.
Like, they're just, like, stretching this out, and the dialogue is just dry and boring. And this dude just walks up and just starts shooting a bunch of people with a real gun, which now, as we learn, they're banned in the city.
Right.
So there are no guns
and
anymore.
And so all the police force in this city, they're like like you said, they're the pioneers of this new program. They've all been given, do they actually name the weapons that the cops have been given? They're like
I honestly forget the name. They're ultrasonic guns. So they shoot like a sound wave. They shock you. And they, you know.
Yeah.
They knock you over somehow.
Okay, fair enough. Or not. This movie sucks. So here we meet our main protagonist. She's an officer. Her name is Sean McCormick. She runs after Watts, who ends up at one point holding the deputy mayor at gunpoint. Sean stuns Watts, who releases the deputy mayor. But then Watts runs away, and McCormick finds the handgun that ended up killing the mayor, like hiding in the bushes, and she takes it. So then she hides the gun because she has no idea what she's going to do with it. She doesn't know where to put it.
And this is what gets me. Like, she takes, like, okay, so she shoots at the guy that grabs the mayor, whoever's down there, whatever. You know, she shoots at Tom Waits, and the guy runs off.
Yeah.
But she has, like, this weird pose where she's deciding what to do. And I can't tell. It's like, what are you... You're like, okay, now that I shot that person, I'm going to stand here and I'm going to look intense.
Yeah.
And then, oh, I'm going to deliberately walk forward. And then she sees the gun. Yeah, and she's supposed to be like a good cop or whatever, but she just takes it.
She hides it in her glove compartment. Like,
I know.
Oh, okay, that's great. So the city council doesn't like the idea of, like, taking guns away from the police and setting up these cryo prisons for the reasons I said. Like, they sleep away their sentences, essentially, and they come out looking like the same people. So,
and all the criminals have guns anyway, so it's like there's no point.
So the question comes later: where did Watts find this gun? How did he get a hold of it? Because they thought that all of the guns were taken, and they mentioned they melted the guns down, right?
Yeah, they melted them down and made a Terminator out of them. That's what they should have done.
Ed 209.
Melted them down and made a law enforcement Terminator.
It'd be better if RoboCop showed up in this. God.
I know. It's RoboCop.
But seriously, RoboCop versus Kit would have been way better than this. So I had taken a time tally to see how long it takes before we see a recognizable face. And the first face we recognize shows up a little less than 5 minutes in when we cut to Flag, and basically Flag has offered a solution to the police to help them with this problem, and this is where they unveil the Knight 4000, which is going to replace the Knight 2000. For some reason, we don't talk about the Knight 3000, I guess. We're just going to skip over that era. I don't know what happened.
Oh, well, because the Knight 4000 is twice as much.
I suppose. So tell me, Greg. Did you see much of a difference between Kit and the Knight 4000, except for the unnecessary virtual reality setup in the front windshield?
I mean, it was an entirely different car.
Sure.
It was an entirely different color.
Sure.
It had a completely different voice.
Yep. It was bulletproof.
And it was bulletproof.
Yep.
But it wasn't fucking Kit.
There it is. It wasn't fucking Kit, Greg. it was they. So they reference in the notes I was looking at, they call it the Knight Industries 4000. So in the notes I was using, they use the they use it. They call it Kift, not Knight 4000. I'm not calling it Kift, Greg. I'm not going to do it. It's like
even worse. It's like, hey, look, it's Kift.
I always think of the future character from.
Come on, Kift.
I always think of the character from Futurama, Kif. Isn't that his name? I don't know.
I don't remember.
And here's where we see Devin Miles, and
oh, we did.
His hair is like really dark. Like he's colored his hair to a point where it's like he doesn't look like the same person. It's a couple points in the episode. I'm like, that's not Devin.
But honestly, no. Knowing this was shot 4 or 5 years after Knight Rider ended, he didn't look that much older.
No, he did not.
Really?
Absolutely.
And there was one, I forget what season it was. There was one time where we're like, Devin's hair is darker. And it was, you know, I think season 2 or something.
Yeah.
Remember? So it's not new.
It's not, but it took me by surprise because they obviously also, they shot it on a different camera. This isn't like a TV, it's not a TV show anymore. So like they were using film cameras. So he just looked a little bit different. So maybe it was just the lighting, but yeah, that was my main takeaway from seeing Devin again.
Yeah,
was
the whole, and talking about the look, everything looked, it looked so 90s. It looked like the whole thing could have been a 90s music video. Like the color,
oh yeah,
like kind of like the contrast is really high, and it's just weird. The whatever effect that 90s effect is,
yeah,
that's what it was.
Okay, and here's one of my biggest problems with the movie. So Devin is there at the police station with his business partner Russell Maddock, and I don't like the idea. Because I think it was more because you and I crafted this theory that Devin is the foundation. I don't like the idea that Devin has a business partner in this movie, that he's working with someone else. I don't like that. Like, I didn't.
Well, it makes me sad to think that perhaps the foundation has kind of started to unravel and has fallen on hard times.
Yes.
And that's the only way Devin can make it work.
That's yes.
It's by, can you? Maddock Rider. It doesn't work.
It doesn't work at all.
The Maddock Foundation. The Maddock Industries 4000.
I don't know.
It doesn't
I
work.
Just, and I think he was kind of a dick. He was a douche. I didn't like him. I didn't like his.
No, he was a prick. Like, that's not the kind of guy, like, he might have been good on paper. You know, he might have had the credentials, but Devin wouldn't have done it.
No.
Devin wouldn't have gone along with this dude.
Absolutely not. So Devin and Maddock are there, and basically the idea is that they're going to introduce the Knight 4000 for the police force. The mayor has approved it and said, okay, you got 30 days to get me a working prototype. And of course Devin's like, oh my god, it's going to be at least it's going to be at least 90 days before we get that.
It's going to be 400 days, 5 years, 20 months.
And the mayor's like, oh no, 30 days, you've got 1 month to show me that this car works. And
well, shit, put a microwave in the driver's seat and call it good. I don't know.
So Maddock's like, we can do this in 30 days, Devin. And Devin's like, well, listen, we're going to need help if we want to have an effective demonstration. And of course, in my head, I'm like, well, of course, like there's your line right there to bring Michael back. Like, I knew what was coming next.
I gotta make a phone call. I got someone in my Rolodex.
Oh my god!
It's analog. But, flip, 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 flip.
But before we meet our Wonder Boy, Greg, we have one scene with Sean and her partner in her car, where she gives him the gun and kind of says, like, "I didn't know what to do with this. I'm not sure what happened here." She gives him the gun, and then like a few minutes later, Sean is shot in the head after she's ambushed by Watts, and then discovers that all of her cops and all of her partners are working with Watts as she's like bleeding out on the sidewalk. She looks up and sees one of her coworkers staring over her body.
but this is after she had her birthday, that they all threw her like a birthday party because she's new to the area, because she has like no family, you know, so she's new to the area. They're all nice to her. They're nice in the, you know, trying to be friendly. And then they shoot her in the face.
They shoot her in the godforsaking face. So I guess I think we learn this a little bit later, but Watts's big plan is to rearm all the criminals in the city so that the city will have no choice but to give, because the police force is bullshit that all their guns have been taken away. So the idea is that they're going to rearm these criminals so the city will have no choice but to give the police the real weapons back. Right? Is that about, am I don't really care, but I want to
I guess so. They'll give them all the weapons back in a big melted ball.
I guess. So listen, Bill from the Atari Bytes, Bill couldn't find anywhere to watch this, so he's relying on us to follow the story. So,
oh, it's this is going to be a better version of it.
It absolutely is. So Sean survives the attack. She's rushed to the hospital, and the doctors save her life by inserting a cybernetic microchip implant into her brain.
Well, first, let's talk about what they try to do. Okay, so she's shot in the face.
Yes.
And they're in the operating room, and the commissioner walks into the operating room in her street clothes.
Yes.
And demands whatever the hell it was. Like, I want to say
RNA? Is that what she said?
RNA?
Yeah.
Yeah, sure, which doesn't make sense. So basically what they do is they put her into this machine where this painstakingly slow incredibly loud needle on this mechanical arm, like the scene took way too long. Comes and like sticks a needle into her optic nerve.
Yep.
So now they can download her memories.
Yep.
What the shit? I mean, come on.
Johnny Mnemonic did this better, Greg.
You know what? Anybody could have done this better. But you know what? It's the future. This is what 1990 thought the future was going
to
be.
You know what, guys? Go watch Johnny Mnemonic. It's on Amazon Prime if you have it.
You know what? We have to give this. Oh yeah. Okay. Johnny Mnemonic. Sorry, I cut you off a bit. That's a great film. If you ever want to,
I love that movie.
Slam a bunch of blue Curacao and get stupid.
Yep.
But like we have to realize that this is the future of Knight Rider. So like
yes.
meaning like
yes.
the 1984 of the Knight Rider universe.
Exactly.
So this is what the future would have been. Anyway, stab her with this thing and download her thoughts.
Right.
Which is crazy. And basically the commissioner doesn't want to authorize this brain chip to be put in to make her to save her life.
Right.
So the commissioner says no, but the brain surgeon, he's like, fuck it, we're doing it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
Does it anyway.
Puts the microchip in her brain. She makes this recovery, but her short-term memory is gone. Oh, shocking. So she remembers nothing about the attack and who shot her or whatever. She has no recollection of that. So some old friends have now reunited, Greg, in the next scene.
Oh, have they really?
So we cut to the exterior of this cabin on a lake, and we see a boat pull into the dock, and this just like guy gets out and he starts walking up with his tackle box, and we don't see Devin yet, and we know it's Michael, and he's fucking like, you know, 9 o'clock shadow. His shirt is unbuttoned down to his freaking his belly, his chest hair is poking out, and he's got this frizzy grizzled hair, and the camera pans up, and Devin's just like sitting on the table with his hands on his lap, and he's like, hello, Michael. I'm like, oh, it's so exciting.
Oh, it's so good. And the magic was right there. It snapped. It's like, there it is. There it
yes.
is. And Michael sees him there. And there for that brief moment, the magic of the real TV show was there.
Yes.
The two characters, the real actor. Like it was. I was like, oh, okay. I'm into this a little bit more. And they go inside the cabin.
Anytime Michael and Devin are on screen together, I kept thinking like, okay, there's these little bits that I really wanted to see throughout the whole movie. Like they're just so good together. They jumped right back into this relationship and it was great. And they're having this like nice little moment inside the cabin. Devin doesn't
drinking something.
They're iced tea maybe.
Iced tea, right. But did you notice that the size of the ice cubes kept changing in each shot?
No, I didn't.
Cuz they used real ice.
So how many takes do you think it took for the ice cube?
I think they did it in probably a couple of takes, but it was the same freaking thing of ice. I mean, they probably did it pretty quickly.
Yeah.
But because they didn't change the ice cubes. You'll see. Devin's ice cubes will be big. Cuts to him, they'll be small. Cuts back, they'll be big again.
Oh, I'm not going to watch this again, Greg.
Okay, you're right. I have the DVD. Should I snap it?
You might have to.
Okay.
So Devin, he really doesn't do a whole hell of a lot of pleading. He basically is just like, Michael, I need you. Like, we need you back. Here's what's going on. Like, we need your help. Michael's like, Devin, I'm retired. I told you no. And he like, Devin kind of pleads one more time, and Michael goes, all right, I'll come back on one condition. We don't see what that condition is until the next scene he's in, but you obviously know what he's agreeing to come back for. He's coming back.
It's like,
he wants Kit. That's the only way he'll come back.
I want Kit. I want to take Kit home. I want to build a garage for him, and I want to sit in him as a bed.
I want Kit to grow old in the garage room above the garage.
You know, Michael, Kit's he's not alive. He'll never grow old.
I want him in the garage.
Okay.
Okay, so I think your first text of the movie came to me at this point right here. So we cut to the wherever the hell they are in the foundation. It's like this just this sprawling warehouse with spotlights all the way down the hall.
It's wherever Running Man was shot,
or
American Gladiators. It's like this empty warehouse with all these like 90s looking lights everywhere.
And so then I get a text from Greg when this scene opens and goes, they fucking dismantled Kit.
Yeah. So Devin's there, Michael's there, and stupid guy.
Mad
What's
Dick.
His name? Maddox is there.
No, it's Mad Dick.
Mad Dick. Okay, Mad Dick is there, and Devin's like, or Michael, you dismantled him? And Maddox is like, well, he had no purpose. This is the only way it could, you know, make the company survive. You know, I had to sell off parts. So he basically, he chop-shopped Kit.
Yes.
And pulled them all apart, threw whatever was left in like a dumpster and stored it at the foundation's warehouse.
Like, and just like,
like
sold parts of his CPU for medical research.
I know. It's like, what the shit? I mean, come on. Come on. You couldn't have just mothballed Kit and like had a dead battery and, you know, some montage of Michael trying to get him working again. Like, barely doesn't know if it's going to work anymore.
But no, they took
him apart.
I would have much rather seen Michael like walk in and he looks in the corner of the warehouse and he's just like draped in a drop cloth and he pulls it out and it's just like, there he is. Like, there it is. But no. He just sells.
Oh, you know what would have been? So, you know, the first time when they met Carr, he was in the warehouse this whole time.
Mm-hmm.
What if poor Kit was just put away in the warehouse, you know, and the doors were locked and he couldn't get out. And he conveniently can get out of things at times and other times not. This is one of the times. So for the past like 4.5 years, Kit's been alone in this warehouse playing solitaire with himself and he's gone crazy. Wouldn't that be fun?
That would have been a far better for Michael trying to have to like bring Kit back from the brink. That's the whole movie is Michael trying to talk Kit down. Oh, that would be, I would have loved that. God.
Okay. Well, that didn't happen.
No. So Michael's basically ready to walk away, and he's like, this is all I needed. This is what I wanted, and you didn't give it to me. I'm done. He ultimately decides that he's just going to have to rebuild Kit, but of course, you know, most of Kit's circuitry is gone. So,
and the body, too. The body, the one thing they said is that they couldn't destroy, or they destroyed bits of it, but I'm like, but his molecular bonded shell, how did you do that?
Right.
I don't know. So the body's gone. All that's left are some electrical components.
Yeah. So, I mean, Michael does, like, he reactivates Kit's, like, main CPU. And I loved this first interaction when Michael's trying to get him to work and you see the lights come on and Michael and Kit just goes, Michael, is that you? You look like crap. And then Michael's like,
hey, buddy.
Yeah, well, so do you, pal. Like, there's that relationship again. I'm like, it was so good.
He sounded different, though. I mean, it was Bill Daniels, but Kit sounded different, of course, because he's been in pieces. It's like when he was made into a Portakit. Remember, he was put in the TV from the weird music woman, whatever that episode that was?
Yeah.
It's the same kind of thing. So Michael has like a card table set up in this enormous warehouse, and he has like a little shop set up at one end with like a TV screen and a soldering iron.
That's it.
And he gets Kit working again. But you see like, you know, Kit's little voice light bars.
Yeah.
And it's just some LED strips, and I'm like, oh man, it's all beat up. It's like, it's just like he wired this thing up with parts he had, you know? So it's like the slickness of Kit is long gone.
Yes.
It's leftover parts now.
And so Michael has no choice. So somehow over the course, I mean, there's really no time frame. We don't know how long this movie takes place in, but
8 hours.
8 hours. But so somehow Michael
4 hours.
Not only reinstalls Kit, but so Michael's been driving around and like rebuilding a 1957 Chevy Bel Air that he's driven to the foundation. So Michael takes all of Kit's componentry, his screen, the dash lights, the LED lights on the front, and then he installs them into the front and the dashboard of the Chevy,
like almost overnight.
Yes,
you know, and it gets Kit running again inside the Chevy,
right?
A beautiful looking car,
it is.
But like, I'm like, God, how did he even do that? We never once saw him working on Kit, and the only time we did was when Goliath knocked him over and he needed the manual to get him started again.
Exactly.
So
that was it.
I was like, okay.
Oh God. So then there's that night, there was a cool, I don't want to say cool, but there's a moment where Kit tries to like talk to the Knight 4000, the Knight 4000, Matic programmed the Knight 4000 with his voice, and he's just as much of a dick as Matic is. It's the word. And so Kit's like, oh, I see, we're not going to be talking. Okay, I guess that's all right then. I guess we're not going to be doing this now. And that was like, it was just a dumb scene, I guess.
Right.
What I'm trying
to say. That's
pretty
stupid.
You're pretty stupid.
Yes, indeed. Pretty stupid, Dave. But I mean, it kind of set up it's interesting because the Knight 4000, that was there. It wasn't in it all that much.
No. No.
Considering it was like the next big thing.
Right. So, okay. So Sean McCormick quits the police force because she's basically, at some point, she learns that the commissioner did not want to authorize the brain chip implant. So she's like, oh, so you didn't want me to live. Okay. I guess I'm done. Okay, bye.
Yeah, and it was great because she confronted her about it, but started spewing all this, and it was interesting. I did like this. She started talking very detailed, like she was talking all these details about like what she did and all this stuff, and about the commissioner.
Yeah,
but dropping like facts and knowledge bombs all of a sudden, which was kind of interesting.
Yeah,
since her surgery.
Yeah, I did like that a little bit. So she goes to the foundation looking for a job, I guess. Is that how she ends up? Like, does she just, like, saunter in?
Yeah. She walks right in. She kicks the front door in, punches the doorman in the face, storms across some giant atrium because who knows where this office was.
I don't know where.
Yeah, no. She goes to the foundation and has a meeting with Matic and Matic and Miles. Oh, my God.
Matic and Miles.
The foundation of Matic and Miles. Oh, God.
Also, I have to say, this is the first time, obviously, over the whole show, that this is like a fully formed, functioning foundation. Like, there's receptionists, there's offices, there's like just like, you know, like
I think they're just renting a floor. I don't think anything we see in the background has anything to do with the Knight Foundation.
I think they're
at such a point that they sold the mansion. Wilton's all his money's gone. He's, you know, everything. Devin's trying to scramble. So Matic rented a floor in some office building, and that's what it is.
Okay.
So there's still only like four of them.
Oh, okay. All right, I got it. So Michael comes in as Sean is like kind of asking for a job, and Michael walks in and goes, "Well, I figured out where Kit's cybernetic chips might have gone. They're being used for medical research in people, da 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 da." And Devin's like, "Actually, it's right here." He points at Sean.
So this is where we learn that Sean had Kit's chip implanted in her brain to help her survive, and the memory chip, the ROM, as Kit said. He's like, "Michael, where's my ROM?" He didn't have any data anymore,
right,
really.
Right.
It's all in Sean. So that's why Sean has excellent memory retention. She can details like photographic memory for data, if you will.
Yes.
You know, she remembers everything now because of Kit's chip.
Because of Kit's chip in her brain. And I liked that idea. I thought it was really cool, but at the same time, you know, I got the sense that Sean was trying to act like Kit, but at the same time, like, it wasn't fully coming out the way I think it was meant to be.
You know what? Honestly, though, to give them credit, I sensed it right off the bat. I'm like, she's talking like Kit would have been berating Micro with facts, you know?
Yeah.
That I got it right off the bat. I'm like, she sounds like Kit.
I did.
There's something weird here.
I did definitely hear that, but it would come and go. Like, it wasn't consistent over the course of the movie.
Oh, shut up, David.
That's what I think of this movie. It's a cheeseburger meatball burp. That's what
We're
I had for dinner.
So much fun.
I had cheeseburger meatballs for dinner, Greg.
Okay, good thing I can't smell it through the headphones.
So Sean, a little bit later, Sean ends up having a vision. I think she hears a bang, and like she has this vision of the gunshot that almost killed her. And it's like she's like she can't quite access the memory, but she sees a gunshot going off that almost kills her. So Kit, they're sitting in the front seat of the Chevy, and Kit.
This is a while later, though.
Is it?
After they meet each other. Yeah. Because what I liked is that Michael introduced them, and they immediately start shitting on each other.
This is why you're better at this than I am.
So, like, after Michael meets Sean in Devin's office, and this and that, basically, we learn that Sean wants to join the foundation because she's the only way she can get back at the person that shot her in the head. It's through the foundation.
Right.
And then so Michael introduces her to Kit. And right off the bat, like, they're at each other's throats trying to one-up each other, like insulting each other.
Oh, that's right. Yes, I remember this now.
And then it's fantastic because, like, you see it's like, all right, they're like they're two halves of the equation. They need each other now.
Yeah.
And this is where I'm thinking, all right, she's going to become the new Michael Knight.
Okay.
You know,
so that,
and Kit's going to need her.
That was proposed for a spinoff that she was actually supposed to be the new Michael Knight to Kit in a proposed spinoff that failed because nobody liked the movie and nobody liked her.
I thought she was all right. And she was okay. She was okay.
It was fair.
I think she had a lazy eye.
Did she?
I don't know. It didn't feel like both eyes were looking in the same direction.
Okay.
That's fine. I couldn't tell who she was talking
to. So this is the point now, because she gets in to start talking. She starts talking to Kit, and Kit won't let her be in the driver's seat because Kit's still kind of connected to Michael. So
yes,
they switch
key fob suppository. You never remove
suppository. That would have been. See, this would have been the moment to explain it, since there was a lot of kind of.
Oh, she's like, why won't this start? And he's like,
oh,
don't
sweetie.
You want to know?
Kit
magnets,
had a cuckamouth,
baby.
By
magnets
the way.
In the seat.
Kit had a cuckamouth in this episode, in this movie.
I wish, you know what? I wonder why. Like, Kit was definitely more belligerent.
He was.
But it's also, Kit never would have used the word crap. He would have used something else. He would have used, like, you look like feculence, Michael.
Yeah. Well, he calls someone a pain in the ass later in the episode, in the movie, doesn't he?
Yeah. But he's also lost part of his brain, too. It's in her head.
Exactly.
So,
yeah.
So maybe something that, maybe Wilton Knight programmed a whole bunch of profanity into it, and this one chip was keeping it in check. Now it's leaking out, and it's just going to get worse. It's like going to unravel, and he's just going to start talking like a sailor.
God, that would be amazing. Absolutely. So this is where she has the vision, right? When they're sitting in the front seat of the car after they've kind of had their introductions.
Well, she had her vision in bed. So, like, she was sleeping, and she's been having these dreams. When I think the dreams are really cool because they're dreams of her childhood. But, like, all of a sudden, Michael Knight's in it.
Yes.
And then all of a sudden, Devin's in, like, different people are in it. So I thought the dream sequences were cool. So basically, her short-term memory from when she got shot in the face or in the head is getting morphed into her current memory. Like, so things are happening. Like, her memory's coming back,
right,
in a weird sort of digital sort of way, like, through Kit's chip,
right.
I think.
Oh, that's right, because then when Kit proposes this idea to access her short-term memory, that's when we see, like, she and Michael, like, lovey-dovey on the swing, right?
Yeah, right. That's but right. In the previous dream, it was somebody else.
That's right.
On the swing.
That's right.
Which I thought was very cool.
Yeah, I did like that. I thought that was at least somewhat inventive way to kind of try to bring these memories out. So Kit basically recommends to Michael this procedure where he can access her memory banks with, there's like, what do you say, it was a 33.3% chance that it was going to fail, and basically, like,
she said that because probability chips in her head or whatever, so it's like a 33. blah 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 chance that I could die,
and basically
or
the,
whatever,
the chip would fuse to her brain and fry.
Oh, who cares? Whatever.
Whatever. So he basically,
they could have sewn a hubcap into her head for all I
know.
Know.
So Sean grabs the gear shift in the Chevy, basically, which then connects to Kit so that they can kind of link their minds, which is when she starts pulling these missing memories out. And this is when we get that one scene of, like, where earlier we saw Sean on a swing with somebody. We now see her, like, on a swing getting lovey-dovey with Michael.
But the best part about it is the stuff that's going on in her head is actually being displayed on Kit's screen. So Michael can see it, too.
Man, that could have gotten really weird.
Oh, my. Ooh, I don't know if I want her in the car anymore.
We might have to.
Or, yeah, I want her in the car right now.
Kit, we might have to do some surgery and get that chip out now.
I'm sorry, Michael. She would die. Yep, that's fine.
That's fine. No one needs to see this anymore. He just, like, shoves his hand into a brainstem.
But so the funny thing is, like, all this shit, like, so the previous night, the previous Kit, Knight Industries 2000,
yep,
probably could have just scanned her because body, like, could have just done it remotely because he's that cool.
Yes.
But now that Michael put him in a 57 Chevy, she has to grab the metal gear shift, and Kit has to dial in the voltage right and basically electrocute her to get the stuff out.
And
whatever.
I love this, though, because in the next scene when they start that, there's a chase sequence, but Kit can't even hit a top speed because they're in a 57 Chevy.
Right, and this is the one thing I thought it was interesting. So Michael and Kit's relationship, even in this chase, is kind of where it was.
Yeah.
However, Kit can't do anything. He can't turbo boost.
That's it.
He doesn't have any like his defense systems. He's not bulletproof.
Right.
He's not fast. You know, but he's trying to be.
Right.
But it doesn't exist.
And we learn in a few minutes that there's an even bigger problem because Kit disappears again for a little while as we get a little bit later into the movie. So one of the memories that Sean finally gets out is the shot of Watts basically shooting her in the face. So she now can put a face to the killer and knows that, and then also finds out right after that moment that her partner, the one that she's trusted this whole time, is one of the ones that's in on this plan and is working mm-hmm. for Watts.
And I want to give her credit. The actress that played, I don't even know. I don't remember
Sean.
Her name. Doesn't matter. Sean, who played Sean.
Yep.
I thought the moment where she realized that everybody she knew and was, you know, trusting betrayed her.
Yep.
I thought she did very well in that scene. Like I was like, damn, that really sucks. That moment of realization that everything around you has been a lie. Fuck. I mean, props to her.
Yeah. No, it was good. I did like, again, there were some good moments. There wasn't enough to fill 94 minutes for the love. It was just not enough.
I have to, okay. Let's pause on that for a second.
Yes.
So you're right. Maybe not enough to fill 94 minutes, but there is way more stuff that happened in this episode than any two-episode season intro from this show.
Oh, yeah.
Which I don't understand. You're going to make a TV movie like this that's completely off base from the show, but you have to spend 90 minutes to talk about Garth Knight and not have any real plot. I mean, come on.
Greg, how does Watts, yeah. I don't remember this, how does Watts find out that Sean is still alive and that he didn't actually kill her? Because that's my next note, but I don't actually remember how he finds out. Does he run into her? Is that what happens?
No, it's from Devin, I think.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, because Devin's, Devin gets in an accident, right?
Does he? See, I don't remember this.
Oh, my God. How do I even... Somehow, Devin has the brain needle, too.
Oh, no. That's late. That's coming very soon. We're not there yet. Because at some point...
Okay.
At some point, Watts finds out... Let's just move on. We don't need to...
I thought you had a point-by-point notes, David.
I did, but they're not great. So anyway, at some point, Watts finds out that Sean is still alive and that she's now involved in the new Foundation project for the Knight 4000. So Watts sends the crooked cops to eliminate her and kill Michael. This now goes into the next chase scene.
Yes.
Where Kit's like, Michael, I can't hit the top speed anymore. They're catching up to us.
Oh, Kit.
Michael's like,
you mean you can't hit 300 miles an hour? Yeah.
In a 57 Chevy?
That thing would fly
no,
apart.
I guess not. And so Michael's like, Kit, I don't know what you want to do. So Kit's decision is to drive off a pier and just submerge them all in water so that they'll assume that they all drowned and they're just going
right.
to sit at the bottom of the pier.
And this was kind of sad. I'm like, okay, this is it. So Michael and Sean are in Kit, well, in the 57 Kit. And
yep.
Michael's like, what the hell? You don't have any of your stuff. He's like, I know, Michael, but I know that this car is, the doors are almost completely watertight in the passenger
right.
compartment. But
he's like, this will hold enough oxygen for 25 minutes for you guys. But unfortunately, because this is not my bonded shell, my circuitry is going to short out in about 30 seconds.
Right. So Kit does another like HAL 9000 starts daisy and starts like, goodbye, Michael. They say their goodbyes right there at the bottom of the lake. And Kit fries.
So we don't actually, do we see Michael and Sean swim to safety?
No, I don't think so.
Because the next scene we see them in, they're, because he also somehow figures out and he rebuilds Kit at some point too. So I don't know where, did he like disassemble everything inside the 57
Chevy
and swim to the
surface? Michael got Kit out and then basically,
oh, that's right. because there's the couple in a little while. Michael is in the warehouse at the foundation with the car that was pulled out of the water.
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay.
Covered in seaweed and bugs, like sea bugs, like lobsters and dead fish. He made a great fried fish casserole.
He sure did.
And he ate the entire thing, vomited on the floor, passed out,
raw.
Woke up. He ate it raw. He didn't cook it. He just put the ingredients in a casserole dish and ate it. When I say he made a casserole, I mean he put it in a casserole dish, David.
I heard
it's implied.
I'm with you. Okay. Okay, Greg, here comes the moment where you almost shut the movie off.
Pretty much.
So Devin and Maddock are driving. So basically Maddock is going to drop Devin back off at his car after they're done doing whatever it is they're doing. So Devin, you know, says his goodbyes and he gets out of the car. He walks back to his car. He's pistol whipped from behind by one of the cops. And the next thing we see is Devin is now in the operating room, the same operating room that Sean was in at the beginning of the movie, because they're now going to get into Devin's brain and pull out the memories so that they can figure out what's basically, they can find out what Devin
right. knows. I blacked this out of my head. So Devin and Maddock were on a test drive for the 4,000 just
correct.
Before the thing. So, and this is where Devin gives Maddock some, he's like, you know what? You did a great job. I don't like the personality, but you did an awful lot. And you know, I'm proud of what you've done. I'm glad I have you as a partner, all that stuff. Devin gets out, goes to his car, gets pistol whipped. Yeah.
Watts basically puts him on the operating table, does the same procedure to extract these memories so he can figure out what Devin knows and kind of find out more about the foundation's plan. He gets that memory. God, I can't even say it. After he gets the memory, he injects Devin's IV line with some sort of lethal drug. And he fucking kills Devin.
He kills Devin Miles.
God.
The man who survived two POW camps.
Yep.
Is more James Bondian than anybody else.
Yes. He's a...
Probably does bare knuckle boxing in his spare time.
He's a proficient motorcyclist. I mean, God. Like
he fucking dies via IV lethal injection on an operating table
and he just,
by a douchebag.
And the last thing we see is Devin takes his last breath, and then we cut to the fucking funeral, Greg.
Dude, oh my God, and it's awful. They did the heartbeat and the music started coming in, and like he died in his suit.
That's
which
true.
Is something.
He did die in his
but
suit.
I nearly shut it off. I nearly shut the damn movie off.
Yeah.
Because I was like, you cannot do that.
No.
Unless you had plans of making like Michael Knight the new Devin. I'm like, no, the answer is no, sir.
I said no. My only note here is no Killy Devin or no Killy Dev.
It's bullshit. I'm so bullshit, man. I like why.
And they have such a throwaway moment, because when we cut back to Michael and Sean in the foundation, it's just like a throwaway moment of like when Michael learns of Devin's death. And then we cut to the funeral where the mayor is about to terminate Flag's contract with the Knight 4000. And then Michael's like, peace, I'm done. Devin wanted me to stay on until Knight 4000 was done. It's done. I'm out.
I can't even. I don't. What?
I just. It's such.
I just need a moment again. I can't even talk about this.
I have to say, though, the next moment was good, because Maddock confronts Michael about Devin and basically says, you need to stay to finish. And Michael responds with a fucking sucker punch to the side of Maddock's face.
Like, practically breaks his jaw, like, knocks him. Bam! He's got like a foot on him and just knocks him out.
Yeah. I mean, that's the one thing you don't do. Like, Devin is the foundation. It's just, there it is, David.
There it is. We need T-shirts that say Devin is the foundation.
Let's make them. I'll make that. I'll make T-shirts.
Actually, I want underwear that says Devin is the foundation.
All right, we can make that happen.
With his face right on my crotch.
So is it Sean? Sean basically basically convinces Michael to get him to return.
Yeah, she goes back up to his cabin wherever he is, which is, I guess, like all Knight Rider episodes. I have to give them this too. Like everything happens within like a 20-mile radius,
of course
so that's fine. So she goes back up to his cabin, and You know what? This reminds me of the MacGyver episode. Who went up to the cabin to run away from stuff? Wasn't that when MacGyver, when his girlfriend died?
Didn't Pete have a cabin and he let MacGyver use it and then Murdoch
right.
showed up and burned it to the ground?
Exactly, but it's after Mike died.
Yes. Yeah.
Who's played by Patricia
McPherson. Played by Bonnie, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
The Widowmaker.
Maybe that's why Bonnie isn't in this episode, is because she died on MacGyver.
She died on the Widowmaker.
As MacGyver's girlfriend. Yeah. So, yes. Yeah, so she goes up there, and basically Michael's like, hell no. He's almost like drunk. He's drunk. He's just like,
oh yeah, he's toasted.
He's like, you know, Devin asked me to come back and look what happened. He's dead. So if you think about it, if we go off of this is still in the same timeline as last week's episode,
right.
Scent of Roses, his wife died. Now Devin's dead, all because of this.
Only,
like, all because of shit that he's doing.
Like, probably the only other person he may have loved more than Stevie was Devin. Like, legit.
He did. He said, I love that man. Like,
yeah.
Do you think Michael would have been buried with him?
Yes. They would have been buried face to face.
Oh, God. Even more of a... I just thought... I'm even more angry now. What happened to Devin's body?
They don't actually... Because you cut to the church after the funeral. You don't know what happens to the body. Does he get a send-off like Wilton Knight?
Okay. No, I guess... I don't know.
Does he get shot off in a cannon?
I guess he did get a... I thought for a second that the bad guys just left him in the operating room.
Oh, no. I hope... Well, maybe they did. They probably found Devin later. Because no one... Oh, God. Anyway... So Michael agrees to come back and basically in secret retrofits the Knight 4000 with Kit's voice. And Matic is rip shit, and I love it.
It's great. So now Kit's all speedy and fast and a different color, but he put the light bar on the front and he sounds like Kit, and he's every bit as snarky, and there you go.
Yeah, he looks fantastic. So Michael and Sean follow Sean's partner or former partner to this. It's a warehouse where basically every climax of a TV movie like this is going to take place. So we find out that all the extra guns are stored in this warehouse. Somehow Kit now has the ability to alter Sean's voice to sound like Watts.
Sure. He's always had that ability to
But
do
he
that.
Has Sean call the warehouse using Watts's voice. Doesn't matter. So he basically, so as Watts, Sean tells the guy who picks up, hey, listen, we need to have a meeting because I've got a potential buyer for these guns. Meet me here. We find out in a few minutes that the meeting place is the fucking mall.
Yep. Yes, it is.
So when they go to the meeting place, Sean confronts her partner and basically lays it all out. Like, you left me for dead. Like, you.
In reality, it's the Riverwalk thing in San Antonio. That's where a lot of this stuff
takes place. I was going to say later that this episode was filmed in San Antonio. So
yeah, Christy was watching it with me, and she's been there, and she's like, hey, wait a second. Like, it's all right there.
It's San Antonio. And so it sounds like you can kind of get the sense that Sean's partner is kind of starting to come around and realize the error of his ways. But before he can kind of fully cooperate with Flag, he's shot by Watts. Watts is like somewhere way behind. And so
in the side of the head. And his brain explodes all over the place. And Sean's like, aah! And there you go. Lots of headshots on the show.
Yeah, seriously. So Michael comes in just in time, stops Sean from getting shot. We cut back to Matic, who sends Kit a copy of the prison release papers for Watts, which was actually the release was signed by the mayor that Watts had murdered at the beginning of the episode. So Michael has Kit print more copies of the release. He sends one with a fake signature to the police commissioner using her name and another one to the mayor using his name. And so I'm not sure what the point of that was, but
it doesn't matter. Who cares?
Whatever. So he follows the mayor's limo, and Kit is recording a conversation between the mayor and Watts, who are now, we find out that they're in cahoots together and they're discussing these release papers. Kit records enough information to implicate the mayor. So Sean and Michael return to the Flag, show the police commissioner the video, and they basically say, okay, that's what we need. Let's go arrest the mayor, and let's bring Watts back in for justice. So the rest of the movie takes place at the mall. Well, actually, on their way there, Kit gets caught in traffic and mm-hmm. can't get there fast enough, so he goes amphibious.
Of course he does.
Which was, of course, you know, because of course
because
he can
in the Knight 4000.
And I wanted to know how did they get him out of the water, Greg?
I don't know, because he goes amphibious and it's like through a bunch of channels and weird aqueducts and stuff to get to wherever the final destination was, some hotel, I don't know. But he's stuck in like this channel, and that's the last we see of him.
That's it. Yeah,
stuck in a puddle.
Because we see him at the end of the I keep saying episode. I can't get it out of my head. We don't see Kit to the end of the movie, but who was the random guy? Was he a cop? You see this one guy like stop Kit from hitting the side of the.
Oh no! It was definitely just like a grip or somebody told you gotta here put on this shirt and stop. Don't let the car bump the side of this thing.
Okay.
That's what that was.
You're probably right. Absolutely.
They just didn't care like that. You can put a car in this trough or whatever, but you can't let it bump the side.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we'll have a pedestrian stop it. That's it.
Yeah. Okay. So basically, Kit's only job at this point is to prevent the other cops from coming in while Michael gets into the final confrontation. So Kit jams the doors and the radios of the cop cars, which stops them from coming in. Watts meets up with this prospective buyer, but when Watts sees Sean kind of moving in, he shoots her in the shoulder, and then the buyer and Watts run. Michael takes down one of the cops, goes after Watts. Sean puts a wig on and basically disguises herself in front of the elevator so she can knock out one of the other cops and take her handgun. Michael, we're almost there, Greg.
I'm ready. I'm done.
Michael catches Watts, and with Kit's assistance, Michael basically, because Michael only has this ultrasound gun, and Watts has a hostage. So Kit is talking to Michael, saying, "All right, Michael, you know, a little bit up, a little bit to the left, 2 degrees here. All right, go." And he fires the ultrasound gun, which disarms Watts and gets rid of the hostage. Sean shows up, tells Watts, "Drop your gun." Watts puts his gun down, but then reaches into his back, pulls out another gun, and then Michael ultrasounds him. Watts goes over the side of the guardrail and lands face up in a really weird position on a moving escalator, and he's dead.
Of course he is, because the ultrasonic shot didn't kill him. It's landing on a damn escalator.
Yes.
Broke him in every place.
Absolutely. 100%.
And he's slowly moving up, and no one's hitting the emergency stop till he gets to the top, and his body kind of hits the top, but the bottom, it's still pushing his feet up, so it's like thud, 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 thud. And then it starts pulling his clothing in, so it's like, and starts ripping him apart. Everyone's worried about Sean. Is Sean okay? But Watts is getting like slowly eviscerated by an escalator.
It's like that scene. Is it Dead Alive? Where we just see this like puddled mess of skin, just like because it just pulls the bones through and just leaves.
I just want to say, speaking of Dead Alive, but it reminded me of Bad Taste or Brain Dead.
Bad
Peter
Taste.
Jackson's
it wasn't
film.
Dead Alive. It was Bad Taste. Okay. Is what I was thinking of.
The soundtrack of this reminded me of Bad Taste.
Oh,
it was very. It was like all made on a keyboard. It was very weird.
It was. And I have to say, I actually liked the score. I liked the music. I thought the music was maybe one of the best parts of the movie.
Okay.
So, okay. We end the movie with the mayor being arrested for his involvement. He's now cryogenically frozen because clearly they didn't realize that this is a stupid system. Because they freeze the mayor. And we end that moment with one of the prison guards saying, "Oh, we got to go thaw out that Manson guy. He's up for parole." Get the fuck out of my face. Will you please?
Okay. The one scene that they cut, which I did a deep dive on the research. They cut after the mayor was frozen. They cut the scene of Michael teabagging him.
Yes.
They didn't think it was appropriate.
No closure to a series would be complete without a good old-fashioned night teabag. That's it. That's perfect. I love it. So Michael goes back to retirement. Kit stays behind at the Knight Foundation with Sean and Maddock, and that's kind of where we. That's it. That's it. We never. Michael just gone. End of movie. Done. Done.
Having trouble going to sleep at night? Have some Michael Knight tea bag. Get a nice warm cup of tea
bag.
I don't know.
We forgot. You know what we forgot to mention? The stupidest scene in the movie was when Kit's trying to figure out how his components work in the 57 Chevy, and he sees a guy trying to rob an ATM, and he stuns him. And then it turns out that it's James Doohan from Star Trek playing himself, muttering lines from Star Trek.
That's the absolute best scene in the whole movie.
By far. And he's like,
and nobody's calling him by his real name. They're calling him Scotty.
He's like, oh, and he looks at Maddock and he goes, wait. Michael's like, Maddock, wait. You're a Trek fan? You're a Star Trek fan? This is James Doohan. This is Scotty. Like, what the fuck?
It's so weird. Yeah. Weird.
It's the weirdest scene. Obviously this was a really bad TV movie with you know, it was this loose thread of the Foundation and Michael's retirement connecting to the television show. I don't know. There was just this undeniable charm while I watched the movie. I didn't like it. But like, I didn't hate 57 Chevy Kit. I thought Grizzled Michael Knight was great. I still love the relationship between he and Devin. I liked Watts. I really liked the music. I have to say, I know you said you liked Sean, but I thought that I didn't think she was that good. She had a really big job in front of her, like with Kit's chip in her brain. But, you know, there were these glimmers of Kit's personality, but I never fully bought in that she had any sort of a chip in her brain. Like it never clicked with me, you know?
Okay, yeah, I get that. I mean, I didn't really feel it either. I saw bits of it. I mean, as a whole, though, I thoroughly disliked it. Like, I didn't even like the music. I didn't like anything. It was just frustrating to no end. Like, of what they did or what they could have done, and they just fucked it all up.
You know, I just think with a poor script and a story like this, and honestly, the lack of the black T-top was a complete misfire. I think that was the biggest thing that was missing from this movie.
That's Kit. That's the point. Yes. Kit is a personality, and like, you can put him in another car, and like, but that's not Knight Rider.
No, it's not. It absolutely is not.
Like, oh, let's bring... Okay, I know a guy who can help. And you have the original Kit, and you call Michael Knight back to do some... to bust the bad cops. That would be awesome.
Yes.
They're all kind of making fun of him because it's a, you know, it's a 1984 Pontiac or whatever in the year 2000. He's like, okay, sure. But he just kicks ass. That would have been great.
I think if like you said, if Kit hadn't been dismantled and Michael just comes back to be part with Kit and just have this like basic 90-minute TV movie cop procedural, it still would have been it would have been so much better than watching this.
It's like, it would be like Marty McFly digging out the DeLorean in the desert that Doc Brown hid 70 years ago. You know, that kind of thing. Like, all right, we're back again.
See,
oh man.
And I may have even been a little better with the fact that they killed Devin, but honestly, don't ever kill Devin.
Never kill Devin.
No kill Dev. You don't do that.
But I had to do some serious thinking to allow me to be able to put this in my brain somewhere.
What's your theory, Greg? We're done. What do you got?
Well, my first theory started off with the fact that they killed Devin.
Yes.
And the one thing we didn't see was like, okay, I couldn't accept it. I'm like, no, there's no way that Devin is dead. But Devin's trying to – Devin knows that the Foundation is not what it used to be, and he's trying to move on. He got Michael to come back. What if the doctor that saved Sean came back and saved Devin?
Okay.
And did the same thing I talked about last week. Like, Stevie got shot but survived, but Devin faked her death so Michael would stay.
Yeah.
Now Devin fakes his death so that Michael would stay. Okay, so there's that theory. I'm thinking about that. I'm like, okay. Well, that's plausible. But I still hate this universe, and I don't want to accept the movie as a
Fair
whole.
Fair enough.
So I'm like, okay, well, what ties this movie in to the other bits of Knight Rider?
I love it.
And the only thing that's really solid is the fact that Michael, you know, they said that Michael retired in 1990 and started a bass fishing charter, which failed. That's what Sean was telling him. She has all this data in her head.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
So Michael started a bass fishing charter, and it failed, and he became this grizzled guy, and then Kit says, oh, he looks like shit.
Of course.
Okay. So I'm starting to tie all this stuff together. Okay. Michael looking like shit, Kit being dismantled and pulled in pieces, the absence of Bonnie and RC in the entire show.
Yep.
The fact that Sean gets shot in the head and loses her memory exactly like Michael, and then works for the Foundation to uncover corrupt cops. Devin dying and disappearing, and someone else taking over the Foundation.
Yeah.
I haven't researched any of this. This may be in Knight Rider fandom someplace. I think this entire movie is a dream that Michael Knight is having during the episode of The Santa from Roses, after Stevie is dead and he's inside of Kit, mourning her death on the beach, drunk as hell, passes out, has this dream of what happens in the future if I do this, and it fails. Kit's gone. Everything's Devin's dead. It starts unraveling all this stuff, and it's because he has this dream of learning what will happen if he quits the Foundation that he goes back to the Foundation in Scent of Roses.
Oh, dude. That is so much better. Like, I can just see him waking up and Kit asking where he's going to go, and he's like, we're going home, buddy. We're going to family. Mm-hmm. We're going to the Foundation, and then he never leaves the Foundation. So the whole
right.
thing from Michael going to the Foundation and retiring in 1990 for 10 years, that's all a dream.
Yes.
Oh.
So, okay, if I quit and I retire, I'm going to start this bass fishing thing, and it's going to shit the bed, and then I'm going to get all depressed and become an alcoholic, and I'm going to go back to the Foundation.
Yeah.
But since I left, Bonnie quit and RC quit, and then Devin had to part it out and partner up with this other douchebag, and everything's going to pieces.
Oh.
And so Michael realizes that if he leaves, he's the keystone holding the whole organization together. Or the crew, the immediate crew. So despite Stevie's death, he has to go back or everything's going to fall
apart.
Dude,
that's it.
That's the answer.
That is how you've been able to come to grips with this shit stain.
Which reconciles the weird music, the odd look of everything, how Kit's been put inside of a 57 Chevy, because it's Michael's dream version of what Kit would be if he built him. Because if you notice, like, he's not built well. He's missing all his parts. His voice display is all messed up because Michael soldered him together. Michael's not Bonnie. This is what happens when Bonnie's not around. He can't maintain any of this stuff.
No, he absolutely can't.
So it's Michael's version of the future
okay.
in his brain.
There's your thread right there, Greg. I'm in for it. It is that's going to help me sleep. So if I ever wanted to watch this again, I can just assume that Michael passed out drunk on the beach at the end of Scent of Roses and hasn't driven back to the Foundation yet.
So that bit where Michael gets in the car, whatever, says, we're going back, Kit. We're going back. It's because he's been on like a 4-day drunk on the beach and he's all effed up. He's just like, and Kit's just been with him.
Oh.
But.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
That's. Oh. Yep. Okay. We're going to keep it right there, and we're going to close the book on this movie and just live that storyline in our memories forever. All right, Greg. Hey, listen. Do you want to come back one more week and do this just one more time? Do we want to
I do.
Do we want to close the book on Knight Rider and just put her to bed? And maybe have a few cries, and maybe we'll drink next week.
Okay.
That's fine with me. I bought a whole shitload of tonic last night because I needed to drink. So I'm ready. next week, guys, it's funny because Greg and I were talking about this, and we're like, do we want to do one more week, or do we want to jump into Airwolf early? And, you know, you actually tipped the scales back, Greg, because you're like, you know, I like the closure of saying goodbye to the show and just kind of doing one last ride with the show, no pun intended. But I think we decided, I think I was hesitant, but Greg, you kind of talked me back. So next week, we're going to do the series recap. We're going to talk about, we're going to try to desperately to remember the last four seasons of the show. Although I went on a note bender and I wrote down as much as I could over the four seasons so that we could really just kind of talk about the highlights from each season. So, but you're right, Greg, it's a nice way for us not only to get the taste of this shit out of our mouth, but it's just nice to kind of, to officially close, we did it with MacGyver, and I think we have to do it with this because I honestly will rank this far higher than MacGyver in my book. But it's nice to close, officially kind of say goodbye to Knight Rider before we jump into the new show. I mean, Michael and Devin aren't gone. We will loop them into Airwolf at every
turn. Oh, they'll be there
turn
forever.
That we can.
Oh, it's all tied together.
But, I mean, Greg, was this as painful as you had wanted? As you would hope.
It was fun. There's more stuff I want to talk about how Michael, you know, Michael's dream, Sean's basically a facsimile of him, the same storyline.
Yes, it really is.
So there's so much. I could just go on a deep dive and like tie this all together. But I feel much better. I'm glad we watched it. I think it had to be done in the world of Knight Rider.
I agree.
Good and the bad. So, yes, I feel I'm in a good place now.
All right, listen, guys, if you guys want to get in touch with us, so Greg has mentioned it before, and we've talked about it. All of our social platforms are going to stay the same. They're just going to change their names. So for right now, you can find us on Instagram at Knight Rider Years, Twitter at Knight Rider Pod, Facebook.com/ChampaKlein won't change. We're just going to change over all the images. You can visit our website, champaKlein.com. You can call our hotline, 207-835-1954. Leave us a message about anything. We did get a voicemail this week. We'll play it next week for the series recap so we can kind of clear out all of our past due hotline messages. And then if you want to leave us a review and rate us on Apple Podcasts, it's the best way for us to be heard and seen by other listeners. And if you have a friend that you know that loves Airwolf, tell them about our show because they'll probably hate it by the time they get through our first episode. So, you know, yes. Whatever you decide to do. Greg, any closing thoughts before we say goodnight and see you guys next week?
I have to pee so badly right
you
now.
You should have stopped in the middle, Greg.
No, I was on a roll. This had to be done.
That's true. All right, guys, listen. For the Knight Rider Years, I am your host. Oh, my God, what's his name? I am your host, Thomas Watts's withered husk at the top of the escalator.
I'm your host, Grizzled Michael, passed out in kit on the beach covered in cheeseburgers.
Have a fantastic week, everybody.
I'm thinking, kid. I'm not upset.
Your pulse rate is up, your blood pressure is high, and you're gripping the steering wheel with alarming pressure.
You've been listening to a podcast of the Podfix Network. Discover more audible gems like this at podfixnetwork.com. Make sure to catch up-to-the-minute network shenanigans by following @Podfix on Twitter, official_Podfix on Instagram, @Podfix Network on Facebook. And make sure to subscribe to Podfix Presents wherever you choose to find podcasts. The Podfix Network, artist owned and loved.